Fuck, oh, what just happened? damn it.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of Dungeons & Degrees. My name's Adrian.
And I'm Alex.
And today we have a special guest. Special guest, introduce yourself.
Hey everybody, my name is VJ. My pronouns are he, him, and they, them, interchangeably, so have fun with that if you catch me in the wild. I am a professional TTRPG designer. I've been featured in works for, you'll see me a lot on the DMs Guild. I've also done some work for MCDM Productions, Arcadia, and Flea Mortals. I'm also a pro GM. Maybe some of you listening to this play with me, who's to say? And I also am an avid TikToker. Hi.
Just a few things.
Wonderful. And today we want to talk to VJ.
Just a couple of things.
You know, in this economy, we have to have our fingers in multiple pies. What I want to talk about today is a supplement material called An Elf and an Orc Have a Little Baby, which is a great alternative to what we have currently in the TTRPG space because, you know, we have a bunch of monster likers, quotes, in the community. So there's definitely that. So like, what does that look like as well?
I didn't even think that that would be a thing. I was just so innocent of being like,
a thing.
This is cute. I like that you're building things. I didn't think that people were actively chasing down monsters to fuck. No.
Listen. That is not what I am saying is happening, although I can't lie and act like I'm not one of those monster likers. So, you know, it is what it is.
But yeah, tell me about the module and how it was, or not module, this, tell me about the supplement and how it was conceived.
conceived.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, so there are two volumes out right now with the third one being worked on. The way this first happened was Adam Hancock, one of my favorite people in the TTRPG design space, someone I've repeatedly worked on projects with and whatnot, reached out to me and was like, hey, do you want to help me write a race supplement for 5e races? And building off of the work of, I always mispronounce this, it's Grilaxle's Guide to Ancestry. Adam had worked on that as well. And it was also approaching like how to handle the difference between like abilities that you would get from races because they're biological ones and ones that were more tied to like, oh, I grew up in XYZ culture. And so that one also had like kind of a point system. And so Adam was just like, hey, you want to work on this? And I'd been like, at that point, I'd published one thing. I talked about racism in D&D a bit, and Adam like, reached out and talked and was like, yeah. And I was like, absolutely, hell yeah, let's do it. So it was really like, Adam was really the one to come up with it. Like I said, I'd been having conversations about race in D&D, but I hadn't really stopped to think like, huh, do I want to actually like start fucking around with them? Can I cuss?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Fuck yeah, we do.
Start fucking around with the mechanics and stuff until Adam was like, hey, you want to do this? And I was like, fuck yeah. And here we are, soon to be three books later.
That's awesome. I think that like, as kind of time has gone on, we've had to have these conversations over and over again, unfortunately, with wizards still just being dummies for a nice word. And it just... I've come to realize that I think the future of this game is going to be more in the hands of the community. And I love third-party supplements, things that I don't, that aren't out, and things that like I have questions about, such as like plants, ancestry, new classes, things like that. Like I'm turning more and more to these supplements apart from like buying these hardcover books, because before it was like, oh, I don't got this one. I got to get this book. I got to get this book. And now I'm like, man, fuck them books.
I really got to agree with that. Okay. Before I got access to all of the D&D 5e books through like a D&D Beyond campaign that I'm in and going to be in for like, you know, indefinitely, I would buy all of the books just for like, not even for collector's reasons, because like sometimes I'd get the limited edition, sometimes I wouldn't get those covers, right. But specifically like, okay, this is my profession, I should, you know, see what's going on and happening in there. And like, I could, it's second, like, since I'm buying it for work, I can write it off as a tax, as like a work expense, you know? So fine, sure, great, all that good stuff. Now that I have access to these books as they come out in PDF forms, like, I'm like, I don't think I'm ever gonna buy another hard copy book unless it's something from Wizards of the Coast, unless it's something I'm really excited about and want to go support. I've now gotten my hands on a copy of Radiant Citadel. Of course I have, because all those amazing, you know, creators of color and all the amazing work they did there. But, like, a lot of other things, it's like, eh, I don't need it. Like, if somebody gifts it to me, I'll take it, but otherwise. But, yeah, but, like, on the flip side, there are so, like, the bulk of my purchases for D&D stuff is third party. Like, either the DMs Guild, Kickstarter, DriveThruRPG, MCDM, Ghostfire Gaming, that kind of thing. Like I have more PDFs and hardcover books from third party stuff than Wizards of the Coast stuff at this point, and it's only in the divide is only getting bigger.
Who's someone that you kind of like either look up to or love to work with that's in this kind of third party DMs Guild kind of creation area?
Well, the first person that comes to mind is Adam. Like, I love the guy. I love working with him. We made 5e compatible system together with another creator as well. Like, anytime I get the chance to work with Adam, I hop right on it. But outside of Adam, let's see, there's Zeke Gonzalez, who does the whole Scientific Secrets of, like, XYZ place, that has a lot of, that does a lot of good work, and outside of that as well. And I believe Zeke's pronouns are he, so I have a great time working with him. There are Ashton Duncan, who does editing but also has done some like mechanic work and stuff. Always fun to work with her. She's on our Ashton always does our Elfin and Orc stuff. Like, it's like, hey, we're doing this, you want to come back kind of thing. So yeah, just to name a couple.
Nice. And one of our previous guests, I'm just going to kind of throw it out there, has had a lot of praise for you. And this is Mason.
Mason!
He was just like, I know if VJ hears this, they're just going to turn red or something. And I'm like, listen, I'm just going to tell VJ next week, because that's what we had last week in conversation.
Oh man, Mason's not wrong. I have such a I love Mason. We've like just from interacting on TikTok, and then of course, like, I wasn't Mason put out a bunch of, like, I mean, those of you that listened last time, you know what Mason did, put out a bunch of new classes and subclasses, and I, like, did a quick review for it, didn't write anything on it, but it was amazing, and, like, offered up some, like, design suggestions when it was in its, like, when it hadn't been published yet. But I would really love to do something, like, bigger and longer with Mason, like, would love that.
When you're thinking about all these new mechanics, is there anything that you usually get hard stuck on and you have to like walk away from it, or do you kind of reach out? How do you jump over those kind of hurdles in your creation?
Like, specifically for Elfin and Orc, the thing that comes back to bite me in the ass a lot of the times. So for those of you that aren't familiar with it, in Elfin and Orc, the first volume split up all of the like definitely official and sort of official races for D&D into two parts, upbringing and parentage. So parentage, you'd get biological things. So for example, tieflings that had like a... So tieflings, I think most tieflings get that like delayed magic feature. So if you were a tiefling, you get like a type of delayed magic versus high elves who the language of it, say you learn a cantrip, and that makes it sound like, oh, it's because like you were raised in a culture that values magic, and that would be an upbringing. Like, oh, I was raised in this type of upbringing, so I get weapon proficiency. I know a magical spell, that kind of thing. And an Elfin and Orc had a little baby, uses a point system and gives people like, hey, here's 16 points, here's eight, like it's 16 or 18 points, and you can spend that across whatever parentages you want. Like, if you want to say, oh, I'm going to build out, actually, let's keep it simple, let's say you just have two parentages, you can split it however you want across any parentage, and then you can go down and pick like a predetermined upbringing. But we also have like examples like, oh hey, if you just want to make a quick here's a quick parentage example for the tiefling, and then you can grab like that exists there. And the thing that gets me sometimes is the points, because it was pretty easy with the first volume, right? Because we use something called Detect Greater Balance. It's a free resource. You just type it in to Google. You type it into Google and it'll pull up the spreadsheet. And like this person did a lot of work figuring out what all of the different abilities from the official races were worth. And so really all we had to do was like, okay, most of what we had to do was decide, okay, this is going to be a parentage and this is going to be an upbringing, and then do the points. Like there were some that weren't in there when we first did it because I did a lot of the Eberron stuff, and there were like some of the Mark of Findings and stuff wasn't in there, so we had to like really figure that out. But there was like a pretty decent guide for it, right? Because it's still official 5e stuff, even if some official 5e races are stronger than others. Like there was still somewhere to be. But then in volumes 2 and in volume 3, we started pulling in actual monsters, so giants, ogres, mind flayers, that kind of thing, and it was harder to figure out what their points would be, even though like, yeah, we had like a guide of how things would work previously, but a lot of monster abilities are like completely like out there, away from what you would from what like an official 5e race would get. So sometimes it's like, God, should this be 5 points? Should this be 7 points? And like really trying to figure out how to balance it, because that's one of the things we pride ourselves on. Like, hey, we meticulously balance this so that if you're playing with the official 5e races and you're letting an elf and an orc have a little baby exist in your game, no one's going to feel like inherently more powerful than the other, even if you can like swap in and out some things, right? Like they're still balanced fine against each other. Like you're not gonna have like an impossibly powerful godlike character just because you're using an elf and an orc had a little baby. And what usually happens when I frequently get in like the, oh God, I don't know how many points this is worth, or how many negative points this should be worth, because there are some abilities that aren't like positives but they're negatives, and so they give you more points that you get to spend elsewhere. It's just if I can't figure it out within like 5 minutes, I skip it and I go work on one. So I'm like, yeah, I'm very confident that this is going to be 10 points. I'm very confident that this is going to be negative 12 points, and so on and so forth. And I just keep doing that down the line. And then when everything is done that I know I can get done, I'm like, okay, let's go back. Let's go through all of the official 5e race abilities, and let's see if I can't find some type of link between this and that to help me figure out what I should do. And then if that doesn't do it, I'm like, okay, I need to make a reasonable estimation of what this is based on my experience as a professional designer and how often I've like, you know, worked on this type of supplement. And that's like the last resort, like an educated guess. Like, okay, this feels like it should be 10 points. And if I'm stuck there, I'll loop in Adam like, hey, Adam, I'm not sure how much this should be worth. Like I was feeling 10 points, but do you think it should be 8 or 12? So yeah, that's kind of the process if I get stuck working on that.
So the journey of feeling confident in your like in your ability to write things that are balanced, but really it's just like the confidence you have in making your own decisions is what it sounds like.
Truly, yes. Making my decisions and standing behind them when somebody's like, hey, is there a reason you put this at this, but this is this? I was like, yeah, I weighed this against this. But if somebody comes in a comment and is like, hey, you have this listed as this, but this is higher or lower, can you explain why? And if I can, I'll be like, hey, here's my thought process. And if they're like, hey, but maybe it should be like this. And if they're right, I'm like, okay, well, I'm like, hey, Adam, this person made a good, really good point. Maybe we should edit this. But that's another thing. Don't ever be afraid. Don't ever be afraid to like, to listen to people when they make suggestions. Like, I'm not saying you always have to accept the criticism other people give you for stuff. Like, because at the end of the day, it's your name on it. But except, like, when it comes to, like, you know, bigoted stuff, if people from that group are like, hey, this is kind of fucked up, you should probably listen to that. But as far as, like, mechanical things go and whatnot, where it isn't, like, an issue like that, like, don't feel like less of a designer because somebody suggested this outside of who you were working with. And don't feel bad about reevaluating from outside feedback. It's perfect. It's a great thing to do, especially when like if you're like, hey, this criticism actually feels pretty good and they make good points and I can actually see why it would actually be like this.
So how did you feel? Because I'm going through this journey as a professional, like trusting my own voice above the noise around me. So how do you feel like you navigated that? If you had any issues, how'd you get through them? If you're perfect and wonderful, like, tell us your secret.
Yeah, I am, you know, I'm very much perfect and wonderful. No, it's, I'm gonna be honest. So before I got into TTRPG design stuff, So I got a bachelor's degree in creative writing and public relations, and the creative writings with a focus in African American and queer studies. And I always had the thought, like, oh, I'm gonna write short stories. I'm gonna get published. I'm gonna get in there. And I like throughout like middle school, high school, and college, I did write stuff. I did submit stuff. I was an editor for a magazine at my college where I was always writing something for like my final dissertation to get my degree was like a culmination of my creative writing and African American studies stuff. And so like I took a bunch of classes where people were constantly ripping my shit apart on purpose. Like we would read things. I took every single creative writing class and poetry class that I could get my hands on. We'd critique each other's stuff. We'd rip it apart. We'd put it back together. If I went into that having any like, how do I, you know, my voice, how do I maintain this? It was quickly beaten out of me. That was like one way. Like I definitely think, even though I wasn't taking any of that stuff to prepare me for TTRPG design, because I didn't even really know about TTRPGs existed until like 2015. I know, I'm this huge video game and comic nerd, and I'm just like, why didn't I know about this sooner?
This is a safe space. Don't even feel bad right. about how you got here. You are here. You are welcome. Okay. Like everything else.
Listen, I feel like my dad failed me as a nerd. I'm like, why didn't you know this? But anyway, but yeah, so like when I got in there, there was a lot of that. Like, even though I had gotten into because I had to apply to get into a new college because I wanted an undergraduate degree in creative writing. But the school that I went to didn't offer that. They only had a master's degree. And I was like, and at the time I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally going to get the master's, but I want the undergraduate right now. And so I had to apply to get into the college in the first place. And so like, I mean, applying and getting in was already like a boost, but then I was being taught by people that had been published in things, were making amazing poetry and writing, making not like the biggest living off of it, but making us like a substantial amount of money and there was like in my first official creative writing class, there was a little bit of period of time where it's like anytime I got any critique, I was like, God, I'm not cut out for this. I totally can't write this. I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. And my professor definitely, who's like barely older than me, definitely picked up on that and just sat me down and was like, look, we're going to rip your shit to shreds. I'm going to do it. And then if you ever publish this, other people are going to do it. But then there are also going to be people that are just like, hey, this is great. And you should take that, like when they tell you it's great, they're going to mean it. Obviously, take the outside influence of ripping that shit to pieces with a grain of salt. Take mine with some grain of salt, but like consider it more than like these random fuckers probably. Like, was pretty much saving even your shittiest thing that you're going to turn into me is going to be worth something. So like, just own it. Just be in there. So like, y'all, even the worst thing that you could possibly write and published, it's going to be worth something to somebody out there. And you can only get better. You can only go uphill from your rock bottom. Most people can only go uphill from their rock bottom. Some people will get a jackhammer, but I don't think most people are going to do that. So, like, don't worry about it.
I think that's some good advice, people out there, because for me, I get stuck up on, like, how your method is just, I'm going to walk away from this, come back to it in, like, 5 minutes or something. Mine's like, I've got to get this thing done now or else I am worthless. Like, it's just bad self-speak. It's just like, I got to finish this, this, and this, but I got to finish this one first. And it's just like, I just get clogged up creatively because I'm so focused on, like, I got to get this done now or else I'll never do it. But, you know, I know that that's not true, and I know that these things – I need to walk away, but you know, sometimes it's difficult and tough to get past that with your own internal monologue.
And I get that too, because I've been feeling that with like chasing things that make me feel good. So like the tasks that I'm like, yeah, I got it done, bam, bam, bam. But then you like look behind you and you're like, I got like a quarter of what I needed to get done. There are no major improvements in any of the bigger projects because I just was just chasing that like high of feeling good about it, but like just sitting down and doing it, the like what is the state testing way of doing things, right? I'm gonna do all the things I can do first and then I'll go back and do the hard things. But like, you have to do the hard things too. You can't, I can find menial tasks all fucking day long, but you still have to do something that's worth the hard stuff too. So yeah, finding that balance is hard.
I feel like that's a dig at me because when you said turn around, I have all my clothes while I'm moving, just out in the background.
This is important too, Adrian. No, but I mean, like, so, like, I would go back to my job, right? I can fucking clean my goddamn classroom all day long. Like, I can find things. It's an art classroom. I'm going to find something to clean or organize because art happens in that space. And children are disgusting. And children don't know how to keep paint off of tables or off of floors or off of chairs. So, like, I can get that high of cleaning all day long. But, like, I hate cutting paper. And that's, like, 95% of, like, art teaching is just cutting paper. So if you are an aspiring art teacher, that's your job. You're going to cut fucking paper all day long because they're going to order the wrong shit and then you've got to fix it or you're going to... I was so mad throwing my computer. But yeah, I mean, it's all jobs, no matter what you have to do, right? Moving, writing shit, creating a campaign, doing art teacher stuff. You're going to have to do that hard stuff. And if you ignore it, then you have to do it. And then it's no fun to do it. And you don't have that space to, like, if you're cutting it close to those deadlines, like, that's cool and all. But what's really cool is not doing that as well. Not cutting it close with that deadline and giving yourself that space to be creative and then to give more than a first or second draft.
When deadlines come up, how do you keep your mental wellness in check? I know that's a tough one. I'm just asking.
I do not. That's how I don't. I listen, y'all. I don't. I'm a terrible example of. First off, I've got diagnosed depression and not officially diagnosed ADHD. That I'm working on getting that dealt with or whatever. And I routinely take on more work than I should. And then I berate myself, like, I picked up too many things. Why have I done that to myself? And then I push myself way harder than I should to get all the deadlines done and then crash, like, absolutely just fall apart for a day or two, like on the weekend. Well, for a day, because my Saturdays are pretty booked up as well. My Sundays are usually the only ones that are, like, wide open. And I'm telling you this because don't be like me. Literally, don't fucking do it. Like, part of the problem is procrastination, which kicks my ass. Like, I'm gonna be honest. I have two... I'm on a bunch of projects right now, and most of them I've handed off my stuff to, getting drafts and having to refix them and stuff. But the things that haven't even had their drafts turned in yet, there is an unnamed space project that I am working on with two other creators and as the project manager and as somebody writing mechanics for it. And I procrastinated the fuck out of getting out of every, I got the deadlines to it, but I procrastinated the fuck out of a lot of things and then had a writer's block at one point for a part of it. I was like, fuck me. Yep. I'm not going to get this turned in. And then I have a thing for MCDM Productions Arcadia that's due on the 8th. So, like, it's not, I still got more time with that, but, like, I should have been working on it, and I wasn't, and that's a bad idea. Like, even though I know my struggles to do my stuff on time is partway because my brain's, like, I don't operate like I should kind of thing, there are still things I could be doing to mitigate that and, like, getting my life together, and I have started implementing it, so I'm less stressed, but, don't be me. Do not be me. You will hate yourself for it. And if I don't get this under control, I'm gonna burn out and then just be fucked on working in this job for a long time and be like, well, what am I gonna do? So yeah, I don't handle it well. I don't handle it well, and I should be using more tools that are available to me to do so. And I strongly encourage everybody, if they're gonna be working in this industry, even doing it as a hobby or something like that, find tools that help you not do what I do.
I think it's a good insight because some people can, like, see these creators and, like, oh, they got it all. But, like, we're all just human underneath in general. Like, we're going to make mistakes. We're going to push ourselves way past our actual, like, limit and take on things. But it's still a learning experience. We're, like, figuring out what is my limit. It's not healthy to do so in a very, like, consistent thing, but I think it just happens. We want to chase that craving of, like, I want to make all the things all the time, and sometimes we realize too late that it's like, man, I don't have all the time right now. I feel like, I mean, that's definitely something that's happened with my job, where I was like, I would have piles of notes that need to be taken care of, and I would just, like, okay, no regrets. You just got to put nose to the grindstone and just sit here for 24 hours just working. And I've done that. Like, oh, a month worth of notes that you haven't taken care of? Gonna do it in one day. Not healthy. Don't do that either. So I mean, like, eventually I'll figure something out, maybe. As long as it doesn't kill me, I'm gonna keep trying, you know?
Vijay, what are some things that you're doing that you feel like you're doing well to keep your, like, mental health together? I'm sorry to put you on blast like that. Ooh, you said you were – I'm trying to hearken to the fact that you claimed it. I just want to know. I'm sorry. I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Well, first off, and I'm not saying this is going to work for every, but like I said, I got unofficially diagnosed with ADHD and working to get it like an official thing so I can get some help. Something that has been helping me out that I should have been doing and it was really easy for me to like get set up is Google spreadsheets. Google Calendar, first off, because I can just look at my phone and be like, okay, what's due when? How much work of one thing am I supposed to be doing? And then the next thing is actually Google spreadsheets. I've been like doing a week by week thing of like, okay, like at the start of the week, I check and I'm like, what is due when and what is my progress on it? What's the plan for it? If I haven't started it, where am I stuck? And it lets me see exactly what everything needs to be and what's happening in there. And then it also, because I have it laid out like that and like the deadline on it as well, it means that I can like say, okay, I want to do 300 words on this across this week. So as long as I get that done, even if I have like a day where I'm super unproductive, where I don't do any work, where I'm like sleeping most of the day or something because I'm having a shit time, I'm like, if I hit my 300 words across this week, I'm in good shape and I feel good about what I did. So it's really, the thing that's really helping me is breaking stuff down into manageable chunks, or like, hey, I want to have this whole section written this week, and I'm like, okay. And then if I can figure out, I'm like, okay, here are the parts of this that need to get, here are the ideas that need to get written in this and how much it's going to take to write, and I break it down like that, I'm like, okay, yeah. So if I have like a really shit day on like a Friday or something, I'm like, all right, I'm not doing any design work today. I do run pro games most of the week, so like there are very few days where I'm just like, I'm not doing absolutely nothing if I don't do design work. But it'll be like, yeah, okay, I'm going to sleep, or I'm just gonna watch TV all day or something like that, or scroll through TikTok.
Yeah, I feel that. I don't know if it'll help you. I also have the ADHD and the neurospicy everything else that comes with that. But the biggest thing I have found is like breaking tasks down, but then giving me a sticky note, like not a huge sticky note, like the regular square sticky note, and then writing all those tasks down. And those are like the day tasks. Like I have to do the sticky note before I can literally go do any of the other chasing stuff that I like to do. But as long as the sticky note is completed, then like I can say that it's a good day. But I'm also not piling tasks on that make me feel worthless, because that's how my brain wants to feel, right? I've been like, for me, it's very easy for me to defeat myself and say, oh, you're doing this and that's great and that's fine, whatever, like, and then pushing that to a side. But you're really just a shit person. Like, honestly, like, you have 33 years of data saying you are a shitty person. So let's refer to this chart right here. And it's really like retraining. I've been like in my ADHD journey, like retraining my brain to be like, you are not a shitty person. You do in fact need time to crash, because you are doing 1,000 times more things than a lot of people are. And what you're comparing yourself to is normal people, and normal people are shit. Like, you just don't do that.
That's actually pretty good. I'm going to try that.
That's hard. You are a superhero. Yeah, right. Like, that's what you need to know.
Hell yeah. My brain doesn't like the systems I make. It'll work for like one day, and they're like, guess what? I'm bored of that system. You gotta. So the new system I'm having is writing a single task on a note, a piece of like. And just like, all right, this is the task you need to focus on. Because sometimes I look up from the computer and just forget. And I have to look back. Oh yeah, that's right. I was doing that thing. And then 2 days later, I was just like, this is a boring thing. Put more words on this boring thing. I'm like, fine. And I did it. And I'm just stared at it for a day. And I'm like.
No, and it sucks. Like, I agree with you. Trying to find a system sucks. It's the worst. Currently, my system is a planner that has two monthly spreads. So not I have to have two different monthly calendar views
One that's like pretty and like little tiny tasks that like I can just quickly look at. And then I have a one that can be messy because that works for my brain.
But yeah, I have this like weird double monthly spread bullshit in my planner, and I got a stupid expensive hole puncher so I can put new sheets into it when I want. It's dumb. Like that's what I've landed on for this 2 months I'm currently working on this bullshit. So all that to say is find a fucking task that works for you. I know we talked about it forever. I don't know if we've talked about it on this podcast, but I know Adrian and I, you and I have talked about this, but like the Pomodoro technique of like the, if you look up like tomato timers or whatever, right? The like,
yeah, the 10, 50 school, splits.
The 10. Yeah. I have to do like 10, 25 or whatever, or 5:25 depending on how my brain is working. But right. Splitting up tasks into like mandatory breaks,
mm-hmm.
working really hard for 25 minutes and then like walking away for 10 or 15 or 5 minutes. But then you have to honor that break too. Like I can be there on TikTok all day because that's what it's designed for. And then you come back to your main task and you're like, okay, I got that 5 minutes. I feel good about it. And then like tricking myself and be like, you feel great about putting away the fun thing and then doing the not fun thing. Like, you're great. I hate being a parent to myself. I think that's really, I need like a guardian who's like, all right, Alex, it's time to go do this now. Okay. I don't want
to
be there.
I feel like that's why I excelled in school, because they told me what classes to go to. And now I'm a free person. And I'm just like, you know what sounds great? Laying in bed for 3 hours and then doing something for like two.
The free range chicken response.
Yeah, it's pretty much.
Mm-hmm. It's the worst.
Let's see. I have a question from the Discord.
A question from the Discord.
This is in reference to an elf and orc had a little baby. Why exactly do you think something like this hasn't been officially implemented?
Because they're dicks. Sorry.
No, you're not right. You're not wrong. Short answer? Okay, so I'll give you the short and long answer. My immediate answer is that despite it's... Okay.
Say it. Say it.
How am I? How, it. What am I? Oh, I'm not afraid. Okay. So, despite the fact that Wizards of the Coast has tried in a myriad of ways to address the racism in and out of the game and like in the game and in their own company, there's still I mean, with continued fuck ups, you just got to be like, hey, there's still like ingrained racism within the company, which I think is one of the leading reasons why something like this, it doesn't have to, and like, let me be clear, it doesn't have to be an elf and an orc had a little baby, right? Even though Wizards of the Coast technically has legal rights to it and like they could just take it if they wanted it, that's not how they operate, or so they say. Like, I don't have any examples of them doing that for DM skill creators, but it could be anything. They could do their own system where they, actual system, not the bullshit we got in Tasha's Cauldron of Nothing. Everything. Sorry. Sorry. I call it nothing because it didn't fix any of the race issues. But like, they could come up with their own system that addresses this. Obviously, bring in like actual people of color, mixed race individuals to handle doing this correctly. And if they separated upbringing, if they separated out like actual biology from, you know, the stuff you'd be raised with, got rid of any of like the racist writing that was attached to any of the races, I'd be like, okay, cool. I mean, I wouldn't be mad that they didn't pick an elf and orc high little baby to do it with, right? But I think one part of the reason is like, I think there's a lot of ingrained racism in there, and on the fact that they don't quite understand how far they need to take something to like actually correct it. Like sure, moving away from having like inherent ASIs, having ASIs tied to races was good. Moving it more towards like class or backgrounds, that's great. There's still some stuff in there that like you get as a race that you should get as like, oh, I was raised among XY culture instead of like, this isn't something I biologically know. So that's still kind of wonky. And there's like, so one, I think there's a deeply ingrained racist culture in there, even if the people there aren't like, you know, like slur throwing, KKK repping, Confederate flag wearing motherfuckers, right, or anything, right? Like, and then also the second part of it is like, I just don't like what most people make for this kind of work, because there's a lot of people that do this and that have done something like this in the design space. Me and Adam weren't the first, we're not going to be the last, is more complicated than a lot of what 5e like claims to be. right? Like, not to say that 5e isn't a complicated game to learn and stuff, but definitely, like, these picking and choosing kind of things, the point buy and all, the points for races and upbringing stuff, it is more design heavy and complicated than some other things. And 5e's, I just don't see, like, 5e tries not to do that. Tries. Fails in some places, but at least kind of tries. I can see from that standpoint why they wouldn't just be like, yeah, we're just going to toss this in here.
It's a wonderful answer. I love it.
I said short version and then gave you the long one.
Yeah, here's a short version. Everything. You don't get anything else. You talked about pro play. How did you go about getting players? I tried to attempt like a day or two ago. That's not true at all. It was like a month ago. And I was just like, I don't know how I get players because everybody I know, I'm already kind of playing with them. And I only got a couple thousand followers on TikTok, and everyone that I would like go towards, they don't know what D&D is. The people that I would like, I
love Adrian's giving away his shit for free to all of his friends.
Hey! I didn't know I was good enough, okay?
Listen,
I didn't know I was good enough.
I mean, I give my shit away for free to my friends, too. And occasionally, like, followers when I do, like, a raffle. Like, oh, hey, yeah, here's a one-shot on a Sunday or some shit. So, like, you know. But, well, here's what happened, right? It's Friday on Twitter. I think she might be the number one ranked DM, or in the top five at right now. Was number one at one point.
She has a whole like counseling thing.
Yeah,
like,
I joined I joined the cohort. There was a cohort for people with like marginalized identities, and I was like, yeah, let's join, because I was like, I make about $1,200 per month before taxes, sometimes a little bit less, from the stuff that I sell in the DMs Guild and Drive-Thru RPG. And then there's like other supplemental things, like when I'm working for other like people that are not putting their stuff on the DMs Guild, or, you know, people that are paying me up front and it's not just sales kind of thing. But the consistency is around $1,200 before taxes. And I was like, okay, I need a secondary job that like aligns with what I'm doing and still gives me time to work on things. And so I was like, oh, professional GMing. I can do that. I'm good at what I do. I'm confident enough to run games for people. And then the cohort show, I was like, oh yeah, I'm totally going to join that. And I've gotten a lot of really good advice, how to write ad copy, which is really what's going to like get people to come join your stuff. Also, I do like occasionally blow $20 on TikTok ads, like the, like having my video promote, not ad, but having the video promote it.
Right.
And like, I know that I've gotten some people playing me from seeing my videos and me talking about like the games that I have like on TikTok. So I know that's, and like, yeah, I have more than a couple thousand followers. Like, I'm getting closer to 10K. I want those playlists so bad.
They help so much. They do.
Like, that's the goal for TikTok, is to get 10K so I can get those playlists. But like, Even with those like bunches and bunches of followers, I don't get a shit ton of views. Like, I rarely get more than 600 views, which, you know, it is what it is. But the, you know, when I do the ads, always at least 1,000 people have seen this at the very least, if not more, right? So like, if you have like $20 to spare, I would suggest doing $20 over 2 days. Like, that's one thing to do. That is that has definitely like gotten some eyes on my stuff. Also, if you have money for ads, like, I know Kill Every Monster runs ads for it. Like, I'm not saying you have to pay money to run ads to do this at all. But, like, if we're on TikTok and you're like, I don't have enough, like, followers or whatnot, $20, quick, easy, if you have $20 to spare. Obviously, not everybody does, and can get you some more eyes. But, again, like, the big thing, ad copy. Short, punchy, to the point, at the, like, three bullet points of, like, what's going on? Like, action-oriented towards the players doing some shit. And then underneath it, a more detailed explanation of what's happening.
Writing that down for when I edit.
Listen, if you want me to look at something, you can shoot it. You can totally send it to me, and I will take a look for you.
See,
I am blessed.
VJ Handen got for free.
Listen, you're a mutual. I'm not about to charge you for a little bit of ad copy. I'm not getting charged to get help with my ad copy.
I love, I'm glad that I've been, you know, I meet one person, I meet a professor, and then I jump to this game, like, oh, wow, these cool creators that I've only seen, like, from afar. And I'm like, I guess I could ask them to come on my podcast. I don't know. I think the more I've been outreaching to other people that, like, I've seen them as, like, they're all over the internet. They don't got time for me. I'm slowly getting that mentality down to, like, dude, we just want to talk nerdy, okay? But yeah, no, that'd be great. Definitely, we'll talk to you about that. You said that you started in 2015. What was your first character back then?
I was a half-elf cleric who was afraid of undead because her village had been attacked by undead, and like somebody she viewed as like a father figure was killed. Yeah, I was a half-elf cleric.
Not the father figure killed.
The father figure killed. Man, I can't remember what game we were playing. I think it might have... God. Yeah, I can't even recall. It might have been Tyranny of Dragons. Might have been something else. I don't know. It was that Adventures League. And I had... like, the only reason I knew about D&D at that point is because, like, the college... inside of the college, the university that I got my degree from, was interdisciplinary studies degree. So that's why it was creative writing with a focus in African American and queer studies, because I couldn't just be one. I had to like combine and be like, hey, what are we going to do with this? And I was like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'll do this or that. And somebody was, you know, making TTRPGs and had me and like was testing it out for their senior thesis and was like, hey, anybody want to play a game? And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm around. And it was D&D and it had something to do with monkeys and gave me a character sheet. And I was like, this is so cool. What is this? And then found Adventures League, and again, I know that she survived whatever adventure the last adventure we went on. She survived, and I think I brought her up to somebody recently, maybe in public or maybe like on a stream or something. And I was like, you know, I think she opened up her tavern and became a therapist to help out other adventurers with like PTSD or something.
Hell yeah, I love that growth. I don't think I've personally like thought past where my character has ended in a game. Because it's just always like, on to the next thing, on to this next thing. I've never like imagined what my one-shot character, Jimothy McTavish, which anyone that's played Jimothy one-shot doing? With me.
What is Jimothy doing? Think about it right now. There's
too many things right now.
Yeah.
He died by the undead on accident. I don't know. Oh, yeah, that was John's game. That guy died. Then the other Jimothy McTavish was supposed to be an aristocrat, but fell asleep and didn't go to the ball. Already, I literally missed that game altogether. The other Jimothy McTavish, he's not that one wasn't an art major. I just have the same name because I have to make so many names for my games. I might as well make my one-shot guy the same thing over and over. Not the same character, but just the same name. But back to what I was saying, like, I think that's so cool to see that foresight in your character, what they look like in the future. It's something that I've not learned to do yet. All the chaos is now.
I will say, like, the only reason I've, like, I haven't done this with any other character that I'm still, like, playing or have plans to go back to, but I was like, yeah, I'm never going back to her. I don't remember her name, her stats, anything. I remember she was a half-elf cleric and the hated and was afraid of undead. And I was like, okay, I'm never going back to her. So how did her story end? Like, she was alive the last time I saw her, and I think she survived. So, like, if everything else that I have, I'm like, I could go back and play that at some point, so I'm not going to decide what's happened. I'm not going to figure out what's happening to them.
I pay for the D&D Beyond now because I didn't want to delete any character sheets. It's the only reason. I was like, but then like maybe we revisit this person and maybe it's just the memory book of all of the things that I've done with my friends.
See, I if we're going to talk about D&D Beyond, I love it as like a resource where a lot of adventures and stuff are compiled, but I hate it as a character sheet. I don't know, it just stresses me out getting it set up and using it. So the reason I use Google Spreadsheets for my like getting my life together shit for my professional stuff is because like I just kind of, I'm in love with Google Spreadsheets. Like when people play pro games with me, I have a player stat sheet that I'm like, hey, you have to fill this out. Here's how you fill this out. And like it like a friend set this up for me. As long as they have put everything in correctly, if they roll like their dice, so let's say I roll a 12 and I plug it in the current roll section, it tells me what that 12 means for all of my stats and saving throws. Like, just, I never have to do math again. So, like, I love player sketch. I love Google spreadsheets. But I also use Google spreadsheets for like my character sheets now, like just when I'm individually doing things. Like I have a whole setup for it. I got a template for it and everything. I duplicate it. I've got color court, like the ability scores are color coordinated so that I know which skill is tied to what. I'm like, okay, if I'm proficient in it, I'll italicize it. If I'm double proficient in it, if I've got expertise, I'll italicize and bold it. Like I got a whole system set up so I never, ever, ever have to like, I still do oftentimes have to fill out a D&D Beyond because like the people that I play with, like, hey, we put this in, like, yeah, sure. And I'll update it, but I don't use it. But yes, I also keep all of my character sheets.
I agree with you. I don't like D&D. I don't like the computer. Like I want it all on notebooks and I want it on real paper and I want it on, but then I don't want it on the paper because then I have to erase things and then like that becomes an issue, but it's fine. I also don't like D&D Beyond because I don't trust the dice. I don't fucking trust the dice.
Listen,
they tilt funny and I don't trust them.
And I don't, I have
if it
issues.
Is a physical with, dice? Absolutely not.
Listen. I got my little, it's just living right here. I feel you. I got these tiny.
I do not have a bag. They're just strewn across my table.
But mine are so tiny.
You got a little baby. A little baby.
It's the D4. It's the D4 for me though. It's just the get yourself some tiny dice. They make me happy. And they,
you know, that's the only thing that's important about that, that they make you happy.
I can't believe I haven't lost them. Like, honestly, I can't believe I have not lost any of them.
I misplaced the big ones. Like, my ex bought me some dice that had two, like, they're kind of like flame dice. And the nat 20 on the flame is really cool. And I was going to send it to a friend because they roll terribly and I roll really well with either one. And now I can't find the second one. And I'm like, I lose the big ones. I would never be able to keep up with the small ones.
Ooh, do you have dice jail? Or do you just like switch sets?
Well, technically yes and no. Well, actually, let me rephrase that. I have dice quarantine, and it's less about you rolling poorly. Like today, the game that I rolled in, one die rolled 3 natural 1s, but it also was the reason I rolled a 30 on a history check. Yeah, so I was like, you know what, I'm done with you, and I just put it back in the bag. However, if other people touch my dice, which I'm not like there are some, like, I have allowed people to touch my dice. I'm like, hey, don't touch these. These ones you cannot touch. And then once they've touched them, I take them and I put them in their own little bag and they get quarantined for like a week so that, you know, their other people's mojo isn't on them. And then they go back in the bag.
Yes. Yes, that's me entirely.
What?
Like, look, if people touch it. Look, I've invested a lot of time in this dice. This dice knows me, okay? I know. Okay, this one rolls so poorly in my D&D games. I love it to death. It gives my players an opportunity, right? But like I played, I want to say the last game I played, I rolled like a natural 20, a 19, a 19 back to back. And I'm like, this is rigged, but whatever. Like now you play well. This is my player dice and my DM dice. But I have to keep using it or else it'll mistrust me and will kill me somehow. So I always use that one. Also, shout out to Gabby. Thank you, Gabby.
I thought keeping the dice up on their highest number so they know their natural state, like they know the state that they should always be in. I thought that was fucking weird. Okay. I knew on some level, like, they're always up at their highest levels in their little baby order. But I guess I'll let people touch my dice. Like, I don't.
Listen. I'm not going to let someone use my fork, right? I'm using it to eat, right? I'm not letting someone touch my dice. I'm using it to play games. Like, don't.
Listen, I mean, yeah, I agree with that.
Adrian, do you share food? Is this, I want to know if this is a correlation now.
I always, they can have my whole, well, listen, okay.
Can they eat off your fork?
I'm just going to, I eat a lot, okay? I'm just going to say it right now. I eat a lot. No one's sharing. I give pieces away. Sure, why not? But they're not, you know, using my fork to like eat off of it sensually. Like I'm just, they're just there on the plate. Okay.
So you don't like pass your fork.
Also, people usually give me their leftovers.
But so like that's what I'm asking is there's not like a fork passing situation. Like you don't like.
What? No. Why would you do that? That sounds insane. Why would you fork pass? They have a plate. They have their own fork. zah, on their plate.
That was the first fight that Michael and I ever got into, because I would snatch food straight off of his plate.
Oof.
And evidently that's not the family that he comes from, where people don't just reach across the like dinner table and just snatch food from other people's plates.
Mm-hmm. I do that to my that happens in my family too, so like I'm mostly the one doing it, but like they do it to me sometimes.
Listen, I walked by my AP yesterday and he had pineapple and a fucking just out and about with some tahini, and I was like, oh, let me just I didn't say hello. I didn't say, I just walked by, snatched the pineapple and kept on walking. And then I was like, oh shit, I've got three kids behind me and they're going to think that's acceptable behavior. Cause like, I'm all about, no, you have to ask first. But I was like, yoink. And just walked off.
impressioning the young minds. Mm.
No. What you're showing them is destroying their morals. No, just kidding.
I know. But listen, I balance that with like, if you're going to eat snacks in my room, you better give me one. Like, that's the tax you have to pay. If you're going to bring hot fries into my room, you're going to give me. And then everyone's like, no, they have to have hot fries for everybody. And I was like, no, they have to have hot fries for me. I am the main character in this story. I want the fries. You can eat your snack if you give me something. It's barter.
Wild. And but I agree with that.
I agree.
So people can touch my dice is the moral of the story.
Back to what we did. Yeah, let's see, we're about to hit the hour mark. Is there any more questions that we have for BJ? Alex, don't look at me like that. Just say something. This is an audio format. I can't just like go past it, because when I edit it, it sounds like I didn't give you a chance to speak. Like, nothing? Okay, we're going on. Like, I because I'm splitting out a lot of space.
Adrian's an asshole. I just, dear listener.
Adrian, dear gave listener, us no time. Adrian gave time. I promise that did in fact happen. I can't, Alex, I like you, but I can't lie for you.
Sorry. I know.
Not in this case.
Not yet.
All right, then. VJ, where can they find you?
Oh, yeah. Listen, y'all can find me everywhere at VJH Creations. Okay, well, let me rephrase that. You can find me on Linktree, TikTok, and Twitter at VJH Creations. You can also find me on Twitch and YouTube at VJH Creations, but there's nothing there just yet. I do have something in the works for YouTube. Oh, you can also find me at my website, vjhcreations.com, where, you know, you can see my portfolio. You can see the products that I've worked on, reviews that I've done. And you can find me as a VJ over on startplaying.games if anybody wants to come play with me. And finally, I have a podcast of my own called VJ Talks, which is available on Podbean, Spotify, Amazon Music, my website. And yeah, that's all the places it's available for now. I think that's it. I think that is everything.
Go buy an elf and an orc and a little baby.
Volumes 1 and 2. And check out volume 3 when it comes out. Don't ask me when that is, though.
Because this recording, we'll see when it gets done. And I have a lot of things lined up already. I need to edit. All right, Alex,
thank you, dear listener, for joining us on another episode of Dungeons and Degrees. You can find us on all social medias at Dungeons and Degrees. Come harass us wherever you can, because obviously the more hate we get, the more traffic we get. And here I am continuing our chaotic message of just yell at us and we'll yell back. That's probably a lie. I'll cry. Adrian will probably cry. So don't actually do that. I came in really strong.
Not on stream.
Not on stream.
I'm not gonna cry. Bless you, little ones.
I'll cry. If you absolutely enjoy this podcast or you just hate it, send it to your enemy. If you actually do like it, please just share it with your friends and families. Give us all those 5 stars on wherever the pod you are listening to. Give us those stars. Maybe go find a different podcasting app. I don't know. But give us those stars. Give everybody those stars. Unless it's been a really shitty ride and they're like racist and terrible, don't give anyone less than 5 stars. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Every week. I gotta tell you this, don't give anybody less than 5 stars unless they really, really, really deserve it, okay? You know who deserves it. It's not your Uber driver. Your Uber driver gets 5 stars unless they tried to kill you. They maybe report that.
And give them 1 star.
You don't get killed.
Do it after you've exited the vehicle.
Also, I'm glad you listened to this as your last will and testament.
Absolutely, absolutely enjoy this. You can also help support us on Patreon. We are definitely trying to grow. This is the year of changes. We are doing our best as two individuals who are trying to get their life together in this post-current pandemic world. You can join for as low as $3 and get all of our fun goodness. You can join people like Skylar, Megan, Alex, Wani, Lucy, Mr. Lawrence, Paige, and the always beautiful, never late, 100% perfectly groomed from head to toe, Noah. That one was real creepy. I hope he enjoys that one.
Yeah, I hope they do. They're gonna be like, I skip this part every time because I know it's happening.
It doesn't always happen though, and that's the chaos I bring.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening. My name's Adrian.
And I'm Alec.
And I'm BJ.
Go have some fun.
Oh, y'all can't see me wave. Bye.